All right, it's 8:34 now. News Talk 107.9. We'll break for the news. When we come back, we'll be joined by Julianne Young and David Worley. They are running against incumbents, and we'll chat with them for a couple of segments here on News Talk 107.9. All right, 8:41, News Talk 107.9. Julie, right now would be the time that we normally would be starting our debate between Senator Jim Guthrie and David Worley. We do have David Worley here. So
you know why?
Why?
Because Senator Guthrie drawered me. He put me in a drawer.
Got put in a drawer.
Oh, my goodness.
And then welded it shut.
He did, pretty much.
True. All right. So our debate request got drawer. It didn't even get a hearing. That's
no.
What's sad.
Nope.
Yeah, what a shame.
Or a committee vote.
Yeah, so David, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. We also have Julianne Young here, who is running against Ben Furman in Bingham and Butte County. Julianne, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Neil.
Okay. Well, we thought as we get closer to the election, we're just trying to get as many candidates on as we can. We appreciate you both making some time. We know that we actually initially had a commitment from Senator Guthrie, so you had already blocked out this time in your schedule, and we thought, you know what? We're not going to do that to you. And so we thought we'd make the time available. And there's an extra microphone. So here's Julianne as well. So both of you, it's great to have you with us. And oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say former Representative Young had a debate worthy race.
Yes.
Like it should. I mean, that race was decided 2 years ago by 4 votes. It's a debate worthy race, but she also won't have somebody who debates her. So these two are here
yes.
together.
So that's true. It's like getting stood up for the prom, right?
Yes.
Like you've been stood up by your opponents. Julianne, let's ask you really quick here. I actually told Julie the other day that avoiding a debate is the luxury of candidates that have a 20 or 30 point lead. That's not Ben. He doesn't have the cushion to not debate you. And I think that it is a dramatic mistake on his part and on his campaign's part that he avoids any venue where he's going to be challenged by either you or by a moderator. And I'd love your thoughts on the dynamics of this. Is this something you expected when you announced your campaign a few months ago?
You know, it is something that I experienced 2 years ago. So it wasn't entirely unexpected. In fact, Ben refused to debate when Kiwanis invited him to debate 2 years ago. And so I actually reached out early March to Kiwanis and said, hey, I really appreciate you being willing to do this for the community. Will you please begin early to organize a debate this time so that time does not become an issue? And they agreed to do that. So I was hopeful that we would see something different, but not entirely surprised.
Okay. All right. And David, we were talking earlier about you and you have not had a debate with Senator Guthrie. Is there one on the schedule?
No, there isn't.
Okay.
And so this was going to be the Central Public Forum going to get on the air. And unfortunately, he withdrew, you know, after committing to a debate.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
All right. Well, let's just dive in, David. We asked you before we went on air, hey, has there been any chance for you to be in front of an audience with Senator Guthrie? You did say there was a forum in Power County. Was there a chance for you guys to talk back and forth and share the differences of who you are as leaders? Or did you just get to stand up and say, this is who I am and that's it?
No, we got to do an introduction and have some Q&A from the audience. But so far, there hasn't been an opportunity for any sort of direct back and forth that you'd see even in some candidate forums actually allow some crosstalk between the candidates. We haven't had any opportunity like that.
So here's your opportunity. What would you say is the biggest difference between you and Senator Guthrie?
Yeah, so I think that kind of hit on a couple points. One is I think that people have been tired of seeing proceduralism used to block quality legislation. And this is not just the Senate, it's also the House. But it's where you have one man, specifically in my case, my opponent chairs the State Affairs Committee, and he has the ability to block legislation, even if it's passed by an overwhelming majority from the House. And this has been used over and over by my opponent to block conservative legislation across a host of issues. And I think that process needs to stop. And I don't want to just make this about one man even. This needs to change in the Senate procedurally. where we say, no, from going forward, I want to see the rules change where if something passes from the House, then it must get a hearing and a committee vote in the Senate and vice versa. Because what that really does, it undermines the very nature of the Republic. So if one man can tell the entire House no, that's de facto veto power, and you're not really just saying no to a piece of legislation. What you're doing is you're saying no to all those representatives and all their constituents and saying that all the time that was taken by those people who were elected to office to put that bill through the process, nope, not even going to let it have a hearing, no consideration. So that needs to stop. The second thing, real quick, is I think that there's always this false choice that a lot of liberal Republicans try and put forth to make the voter, they want the voters to believe they have to choose between their values and their wallet. And they always want to talk about some niche economic issues that they're supposedly fighting for, but that's not really the case. That's a false choice. So I want to fight to protect water rights, property rights. You know, I want to make sure that we have limited government, lower taxes, but I also want to protect the values of our community. And unfortunately, my opponent has shown in most recent votes and throughout his history that he's not willing to do that. Two key votes came up this past legislative session. The bill to keep men out of women's private spaces, bathrooms and locker rooms. He was the only Republican to vote against that bill. And then the other one, bill that was prohibits teachers and school counselors from grooming children into transgender ideology without telling their parents, this social transitioning stuff. That is a common sense, bare minimum prohibition we should have in our schools. And again, he was one of only two Republicans to vote against that bill. So I think there's a clear contrast. I want to fight for the values of our community, and I also want to protect our economic interests. So you don't have to choose between your values and your wallet. I will fight for both in the Idaho Senate.
Julianne, I saw you nodding your head a lot there while David Worley was talking about that. You can also relate to that sentiment.
I can. You caught me.
Yeah.
Very, very similar positions. In fact, my opponent has most recently explained his vote against the bathroom bill and against protecting people from vaccine mandates with a dollars argument, which is he is unwilling to support anything that's going to cost us money to defend in court. And, you know, in my role as a representative, one of the things I was really passionate about was winning for the people as a representative of the people. And sometimes that means winning in court. And so I regularly drafted legislation addressing these values types topics with the goal of having it be so tight and so well argued that we could win at the Supreme Court with it. Completely different from this perspective of, oh, I'm not even going to vote for it if we might have to defend it in court.
So, and there, but there's the problem with that, too, is that there are some issues that you know are going to get an instant appeal by a leftist group like the ACLU. They're going to oppose it even if the legislation is rock solid and in line with constitutional principles. That means you're going to have to spend some money to defend that correct principle.
And not to interrupt you, but we have this a real life example, House Bill 93.
Yeah.
We had people sign on to a lawsuit, a legislator sign on to a lawsuit. And I don't know why you would do that just because you disagree with it, but it didn't just get kind of pushed aside. The courts overwhelmingly said, no, this is good. It's moving forward. So now you can answer. I just wanted to make sure we understand this is really happening.
Yep.
And we do have to defend because they'll sue over anything. So now go ahead.
Right. Absolutely. And people have to realize we're in the 9th district. It's a left-leaning district. And there are a lot of issues that we might lose on in the 9th district, but we can absolutely win in the Supreme Court if we're willing to go the whole distance.
Yeah. Well, Barb Ehart could talk about that too, right? I mean, that's a great point here. All right, it's 8:49. Let's take another break, and we'll come back. We'll continue our discussion with David Worley, District 28. And what's your district, Julianne?
30.
All right. We have like 7 districts we're dealing with, so, and I don't always get them straight. We'll be back.
And he sent a mailer to the general in May.
All right, it's 8:54 on News Talk 107.9. Neil Larson, along with Julie Mason, and we're joined in studio by a couple of legislative candidates: David Worley out of District 28, running for Senate, and former Representative Julianne Young running in District 30 against incumbent Ben Furman. So, Want to ask you both. Both of you have something in common. Both of your opponents went to a pro-abortion dinner that was put on a few weeks ago. It was a fundraiser for them, along with Mike Veeley, who's also a candidate, as well as Camille Blaylock. When I saw this, I thought, okay, is this a joke or is this a like AI generated? But no, it was actually something that happened. We pressed Mike Veeley on it and he expressed kind of, I don't know if regret is the right word, but he was like, I'm not sure I would go to that dinner again. But tell us what you've heard from that, and why do you think your opponents running for the Republican nomination for their party would even entertain the idea of showing up at an event like that? And even further, taking money from pro-abortionists. Go ahead, Julianne.
Boy, that's a tough question because I really try to steer away from imputing motives or assuming why anybody does anything. But I will say that I've really questioned some of the claims that have gone out on the mailers and things that he's strong pro-life, not just because of his decision to attend that fundraiser and accept that money, but also because of the strong position he's taken justifying no votes on these other important issues, because life is absolutely something we have spent a lot of money to defend in court, along with women's sports and other important things that he claims that he supports. And so I see the votes on these other things and I see the justification for the votes, and I'm having a really difficult time connecting those actions to these claims.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. David.
So I recently got the endorsement of Rural Labrador in my race. So yep. He's endorsing me for state Senate. And I think that he brings up a point that is, you know, applies here, that there is a problem we have in the Republican Party in Idaho, where people campaign one way and then they govern very differently. And in my opponent's case with pro-life stuff, this is the same problem. Not only go to that fundraiser, he recently received high praise from Planned Parenthood on their social media. So he's gotten a lot of support from pro-abortion groups, pro-abortion sections of the electorate. And when you look at his record in the Senate, so this is one of the problems, again, with the drawing of bills. It's a way to avoid accountability. There's different pieces of pro-life legislation over the years that have come up in his committee, and he puts them in the drawer because he doesn't want to have a hearing, a debate, and be forced to make a committee vote so he can be held accountable for what his views really are. And this is the problem that I think we have, going back again to this issue with state chairman having these types of powers, is we need to have open and honest debate on issues in the legislature. There's a quarter for people to see, so that we can actually see where people stand, and we're not playing this guessing game constantly where candidates get to say one thing to their constituents, claim they're for their values, and then go to Boise and govern completely contrary to what they said in the campaign.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel like we've just barely scratched the surface. Do you guys have time to stick around for another segment or so? Is that all right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll break away here for the news at the top of the hour. And we'll come back and we'll continue the discussion. By the way, if you would like to send in some questions, or we'd love to hear from you, 208-542-1079 is the number to reach us here on News Talk 1079. Neil Larson along with Julie Mason. Julie, real quick, because we have some time, we have Secretary of State Phil McGrane on tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, it's either 8:35 or 9:05. Let me look really quick. How much time?
Either way. Oh, no, you're good.
Yes, 8:30.
Okay.
Yes.
8:30.
Mm-hmm.
So just put that on your calendar. We'll be back. Coming up. And we're back, 9:07 on News Talk 1079. Hour two underway. If you'd like to reach us, send us a text to 208-542-1079. We have both David Worley and Julianne Young in studio with us this morning. And I feel like, Julie, we're like on a trip with all the kids, and the kids are saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And I'm like, well, we're in the last stretch here, and it is less than 2 weeks to go. And every candidate we talk to, I think they're like, oh, I'll be so glad when this is over. So I would bet the words May 20th sound really nice to you guys right now. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of work to do still. So
yes, there is.
a lot of sleepless nights ahead of you, too.
Yeah, it is. So we should say, I mean, this is, you know, this next couple of weeks, there's a lot that is happening with the campaigns, a lot of maneuvering, positioning, marketing, messaging, all of it. And the Attorney General is coming to East Idaho this weekend. Both of you each will have separate events with the Attorney General. We'd love to hear about that and maybe talk about his endorsement and how meaningful that is for your campaigns. So, Julianne, go ahead.
Sure. Oh, I just can hardly wait for this Saturday at North Bingham Historical Park from 1 to 3. Raul and I work together really closely on a lot of things, just in terms of making sure that the legislation that I drafted was tight and prepared for legal defense. And I have such great respect for the work that he's done. When I first came into the legislature, we had an attorney general that was not really focused on that. In fact, he was working against us on a lot of these issues in a quiet way. So that's just been a breath of fresh air, and I'm super thrilled to have him there. We're going to have a field of 250 flags in honor of America 250. We've got vendors and ice cream, and we're working on some face painting and all kinds of fun things for kids, bouncy houses. It's going to be a lot of fun. We hope that people bring their families out and celebrate with us.
Okay. Tell us again one more time the time on that.
From 1 to 3 this Saturday.
Okay.
At which park?
North Bingham Historical Park.
Okay. Yeah. All right. David, you also have an event with the Attorney General.
Yeah. So we're having a meeting in Pocatello. We're getting together people to go knock doors. Specifically, we're having some pro-life groups come into town to support me as a pro-life candidate in the race, but also to lean ahead and start to raise awareness about this referendum we have coming up that could completely change our laws and basically make us turn us from a pro-life state to a pro-abortion state. So we want to get out ahead of that as a parallel effort to raise awareness on that and make sure that people know that referendum's coming up and need to vote it down. But Real Labrador is going to be there and going to speak and meet some of our volunteers and help us get riled up for the last push in the campaign.
So if people wanted to participate in that, would they just go to your website? I mean,
yeah, they go to our Facebook page. Okay. We have the event linked up there. And you just RSVP for it and get all the event details right there on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a question on the text line for you, David. It said, in California, illegals got driver's licenses and some Americans were killed by these illegal drivers. Is it true Guthrie wants driver's licenses for illegals in Idaho? I'm sure you've been asked this question before because he did propose some legislation around that. Would you like to address that?
Yeah, so he's actually tried on three different occasions to introduce or at one point even drafted a bill to give not only driver's license to illegals, but when it comes to legal immigration in general, he's been opposed to any enforcement initiatives. He voted against the bill Idaho had a few years ago to cut off welfare benefits to illegal immigrants. And beyond that, just in this past session, we had two very solid bills that would have curbed illegal immigration in Idaho, mandatory e-verify, and then penalties on employers who knowingly hire, not accidentally, you knowingly hire illegal immigrants. And both of those bills died in Guthrie's drawer. So, yes, that is true that he tried to do that. And this is another one of those issues where he's been opposed to basically any attempt to close our loopholes or do immigration enforcement.
Can we talk about the money for just a moment, too?
Sure.
The campaign cash that is immense. Both of you have been outraised significantly based on the Sunshine reports. And when I look at the donations that have come in, because I'm me, I'm kind of snarky, I call it panic cash that comes in at the end. And there have been these big donations that have come in, which is remarkable because right now Senator Guthrie has a war chest of $137,000. That's more than $100,000 than you have in your last time I checked yesterday.
Yeah, so our new report's going to come out. We've raised about 50. So
oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, so gotcha. We've closed that gap a little bit. But, yes, Senator Guthrie came in with, one, he hasn't had very serious challengers over the years, so he came in with a significant war chest from previous campaigns. But there's also just a huge amount of money that's being spent also by PACs and outside resources and different organizations that are trying to keep him in office there. But I think that when it comes to fundraising, you have to look at where the money comes from, not just the amount of money, to kind of see where things are going to shake out when that person actually gets into office.
Julianne, checking your race, It's about 2-1 in your race. Well, a little more than that, because Ben has raised close to $60,000 so far. You've raised about $25,000. Now, this doesn't count some of the PAC money that comes externally, so sometimes it's hard to say that.
Sure.
But Julianne, I mean, when you look at is that intimidating to look at their war chest and to be outspent that much? What is that like when you're running a campaign and you see that?
When you open your mailbox and there's another two mailers every
yes,
day.
Yes, right.
Yes. Well, you know, every one of those mailers is thousands of dollars to send out. I know that because I'm the one sending. And my donations are coming from people that are writing me $30 checks. Not big money. And one of the things that happens a lot of times in the legislature is that when you're willing to vote against the interests of everyday people and in favor of some of these other special interest groups, they really love you. So, for example, yeah. We're talking about the teachers union bill would be a great example. I would have stood with taxpayers and said, your taxpayer dollars shouldn't be used to fund union activities. Have unions. Unions are great, but unions need to be self-sufficient. Taxpayers shouldn't subsidize them. Well, my opponent stood with them, and now he has a donation from the AFL-CIO. And he has teacher union meetings all around the district where they're telling teachers, support my opponent because he supports education. Well, I love education. It's not about whether you support education. It's about whether you'll support their interests over the interests of everyday ordinary people.
Yeah. Well stated. So, anything else? We're excited to watch this race. I think both of you have run very solid, crisp, disciplined campaigns. And I also feel like, Julie and I talked about this the other day. I feel like a defensible voting record, and Julianne, you have one. David, you're looking to go to the legislature. That's worth tens of thousands of dollars in subsequent campaigns. When you have a voting record that you can defend, and I think conversely, if you have a voting record that you can't defend, that negates a lot of those donations that come in, that you're kind of playing catch up at that point. So maybe it's not quite as out of balance as we think. So
is there anything that we haven't hit on that you guys would like to chat about today?
Yeah, there's actually something that I think we need to look at when it comes to Idaho politics. You know, the Democrat Party doesn't really have a large footprint, but that was true in Colorado 20 years ago. And Colorado is very much like Idaho. And now it's completely different, much more similar to California and other radical, you know, blue states. So I think that we need to look to the future and say, how do we prevent Idaho from becoming the next Colorado? And one of the ways we do that is we defend the integrity of the Republican brand. And when you have Republicans who campaign as conservatives, but then govern like liberals, what that eventually does is people lose faith in the party, they lose faith in their elected officials, and then eventually the base of voters you rely upon to keep Republicans in the government eventually erodes, and that creates the opening for Democrats to come in and take control. And so if we want to protect Idaho, we want to secure our state and make sure it's a place where our children and grandchildren can live free and prosper, we have to look at making sure that being a Republican actually means something, not just in the campaign season, but actually how you govern. And that's something that I think we have to look to the future. And that's part of what this election is about in both of our races.
Well, I want to add just one thought to that. Look at the two voter initiatives that are likely to be on the ballot this fall. Marijuana legalization and abortion. And those are two issues that I think they feel like actually changes the texture of a state. And I think there is a leftward shift that they're trying to implement. So thank you to both of you. Good luck to you in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a wild ride. We'll be watching closely, and we appreciate you making time to come and talk to your constituents through our station here. So,
yeah. Again, thank you, Neil.
Again, each of you will be meeting with Raul Labrador this weekend. Throw out your details again, Julianne, just in case people didn't get it the first
time.
Sure.
North Bingham Historical Park, Saturday, 1-3.
And if they want to go to your event, David, they need to go to your Facebook page. And
RSVP.
And RSVP.
Okay. All right. We'll take a break.